Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the No Pro Podcast, where we sit by a very simple motto here is try some, suck at it, own it, and enjoy it. I am one of the hosts, Mike Dobson, and joining me, as always, Chase Nedovetti.
Hi, and I'd just like to say quickly, 14 seconds is a very long time.
Okay. We should probably put in context of
what we're talking about. Let's just leave it out there and see what happens.
There you go. 14 seconds is a long time. Good. We'll leave it at that. Yeah. This week is going to be an interesting, fun week. As we previously mentioned, that we will be talking all things motorcycles this week. We have a very special guest with us by the name of Sasha Raganovic.
Yay!
Hello. Welcome! But as always, before we jump into everything, we are going to be jumping into our first and generally only segment we usually run is What's Fucked?
What the fuck?
What the fuck?
What the fuck is that?
And as always, starting it off, we're going to send it to Sasha to bring in his What's Fucked story for us.
All right. Well, my What's Fucked story would be... this week, I was watching, I got a clip, and the U.S. Congress is now, just the other day, I think it was Tuesday of this past week, the Congress is releasing information. They want transparency from the government and all of the military bases, CIA and all those, the big security bases to... release anything that they know about UFOs and UAPs and stuff like that. And what's their transparency? They want transparency on everything when it comes to it.
They want to know about the men and the floating objects.
And the floating objects and the little green men.
Tired of this runaround bullshit.
Yeah, they just want, if it's a real thing, then it's fine, tell us the truth. If it's not a real thing, then you got to be transparent. They want the transparency coming from the, and they want, like, everything CIA, FBI.
I would like to see them prove that it's not true by holding up books that say not true. See, it's written right here.
Yeah. Where's your proof? The book. It says not true.
Right there.
But I think it's going to be interesting for that, and it's also kind of topical because I know recently there's been a lot of sightings in the States about what a lot of people are saying. The people have said it's just drones.
Drones and air balloons or weather balloons.
There's almost variations of what everyone seems to be finding. So it's topical in a sense where I wonder if it's possibly kind of teamed with that, where it's just kind of we finally need to get information to people because they can't keep reporting this crap without a reason.
Or they're we want to develop the land around Area 51 and we have to get all these weirdos with lawn chairs out of here. So we're going to tell them everything that's going on inside so they'll go home.
Is there anything here? Yes. Now we got to put up our new condos.
But no, I was thinking about that actually while you were introing it. That it could be that they're just there's that weather balloon that got shot down over the Arctic. And there's these drones that are flying all over the place. I was actually met
Chinese
a guy.
Drones or whatever they're saying. Or Russian drones.
Whoever has the drones.
Whatever reason they're doing this week.
Drones are crazy agile. I don't if you've seen them move around and shit.
Well, and that's I know my sorry to interrupt, but I've had an experience where I've seen an actual UFO or UAP. And I was with my dad. We were on our way to work. It was 4 or 5 in the morning, and we were on the highway, and it was just dusk. The sun was just kind of breaking the horizon, and we both saw this white ball of light that kind of did a loop-de-loop and then a zigzag and then just disappeared, right? Shot off and disappeared.
Huh.
And before I could even finish the sentence, "Did you see that?" I got to, "Did you?" And he's like, "Yup." And he cut me off and went, "Yup, I saw that." And I went, "Okay, so okay."
Then
this
I don't
was back in the 90s. This is 95, 96, 97.
Yeah, prior to the drone.
Before drones were even a thing, or weather balloons are constantly being released.
Yep.
Right, stuff like that. And it's just when I literally saw it with my own two eyes, I was just there has to be. There has to be.
My issue with this whole theory is because I don't believe that we're alone. The universe is infinite, and there's too much going on. I don't believe that we're alone by any stretch of the imagination. But I don't necessarily know that anybody has figured out how to get to us yet because the distances are so crazy.
But again, you're also based on the fact is we don't know. Well, first, I think we covered this actually a few weeks ago because I think I said the same thing. It's we are ignorant to believe we're the only ones any kind of being in the universe. That's just ignorant to say.
For sure.
But again, we don't know any kind of technological advancements because, like, if you look at almost every alien movie, they're always technologically way more superior than us in every way, shape, or form. To think that they can't come here first.
It's not that I'm saying that they can't come here first.
Or like within a time period.
If you're capable of coming here, then why, when you got here, would you listen to the first people you ran into, which would have to be the U.S. government at that point, or whoever government.
Whoever.
And they're like, hey, the rest of us, total shitheads. So you should only deal with us and make sure that you're very secret. Because if they find out, they will kill you guys. Like... Nah, I think if you're that smart and you're that powerful and you're able to communicate with us in any way, shape, or form, you'd just be like, we're fucking here.
Okay.
And then the first gun goes off, you click the thing, and now you're 3,000 miles away.
Yeah. Or they've realized we're far too stupid for them, and they're like, we're not going to bother.
And that's the other thing, like, it's not even that. Their technology is so incredibly advanced, would be so incredibly advanced, realistically speaking, because they've been living... For maybe much longer periods of time.
And light years away.
Yeah, light years away. Civilization, hundreds of thousands of light years away, but they've obviously had hundreds of thousands of years of existence, and their technology has progressed to a point. Well, we're not at that point. Now, at this point, we see something like that. To us, it looks like magic. Yeah, to them, they're like, oh yeah, that's this like little like button, and it does this. That's
It's the equivalent of what we have for like an e-scooter.
Yeah, like, oh well, my little tracking system, my smartwatch, you know, I can set a camouflage or a skin, right? And it's just my watch, but that's what the technology does. But you wouldn't be able to differentiate.
You guys are putting so much humanity onto this thing.
You know, you wouldn't be able to differentiate.
You don't know... You have to assume that given the fact that just the biological differences on our planet compared to every other planet we've ever figured out anything about would massively change the way that these things would look, possibly communicate. They could be like just gas. Hmm. It could just be there's no way that they talk.
Yeah.
Like we humanize everything because it's the easiest way for us to understand it. It's why we make God into an old man.
But that's why everything we talk about, like whereas monsters, aliens, stuff like that, they're all two-legged, two-armed creatures because we can't...
Or if we want to get really scary, like we add extra arms. Yeah. But then nature comes in, right? Like, spiders are like, bitch, I'd be having 8 arms.
Yeah, and they're like...
Spiders. Oh,
that's what it's like. If they wanted that opportunity, if they really wanted to attack us, they could do it easily. They would know quicker and easier and better ways to do it. Oh, yeah, you want to eradicate them? Bang.
If aliens
end up... the oxygen on the planet and everything, guys.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
If aliens
like, you're dead.
End up being space spiders, that will be proof enough for me that there's a hell. Like that's good.
An intelligent spider.
No.
It was in Rick and Morty. No. Space spiders.
But again, it just goes back to now we just have to wait and see. As you said, we'll just wait for the information to come out.
Yeah, I think, what happens.
I think what we kind of talked about off air was there's going to be a serious lack of information, I feel.
I'm going to make a new conspiracy theory here with my what's fucked is what's fucked.
We had a whole episode. What's the new one?
So my what's fucked is... that right now, the Houston Health Department issued a warning about a syphilis outbreak with a 128% increase in cases amongst women.
I just think it's interesting that they said just amongst women.
Aliens are about to be let out of the bag. And the government has them in Houston, but they're not making them stay inside anymore. And what we haven't figured out yet is when aliens have sex with women, it instantly gives them syphilis.
Now, the real question is does it affect the probing?
Yes.
Does the syphilis affect the probing part of it?
Well, is that a step into it?
Like
enjoy your STD. Have a great day.
They're the ones that already got probed.
Apparently, there's a pirate or an alien that's wandering around downtown Houston, just spreading the good word. or the bad scab, whatever it would be.
But again, the fact is, like, they already know the number it's going to increase by. Like, I feel like that's something that needs fact.
Yeah. This is what it's increased already.
Oh, I thought you said it's going to increase.
No. It's gone up by 128% from the year before, where it was probably like 2.
Gotcha. I thought you said it's going to increase, but I was like, how do they know, like, this guy, they already know, like, this guy's out, he's just going to give it to anyone and anything under the sun.
He's out there working already. He already sent his manifesto.
Well, good on him, and...
He's going to fuck them all.
Well, if you're in Houston, just keep your pants on.
He's like the Pokemon catcher of syphilis.
Gotta catch them all, syphilis.
Well, that's as always here in the on the No Pro, we always seem to go back to those lovely, sexy topics STDs and allergies. Man, that could be an episode right there. STDs and allergies.
And a funny comic rap group. This is.
Well, for mine, it has to do with neither one of those things. But so there was an Irishman, 41 years of age, decided to drag his lifeless dead uncle's corpse into the post office to withdraw the dead relative's $246 pension. And for some reason, he is shocked that he was caught and jailed. So, the way it was described is he was dragging his gray-colored and lifeless uncle's body to the post office with a friend of his. Literally, like, Weekend at Bernie's dragging him. And once they got to the counter, he put him up against a door.
Oh my God.
Then proceeded to give his ID and say we'd like to cash out his pension.
Was the uncle wearing sunglasses at the time?
It did not say what he was wearing exactly, but the clerk found it
odd. Picturing a lot of this.
Dead waving arm is what he's doing. Dead waving arm. But no, he apparently literally just leaned him up against a door, said, give us our money, and was surprised when the clerk was like, he's dead. So
how can you tell? Head falls off.
And that's what happened. Is once he let him go, he hit the deck and was like, I don't know, he's tired. So, yes, so this genius...
I appreciate the dedication.
Well, for $246 is what he felt was really warranting keeping his body alive, or keeping his body, just to get $246.
I'm going to guess there's some kind of substance issue going on there.
Oh, yeah. They're 100%. Like, this guy isn't exactly a...
Playing with a full deck.
I don't even think he's got a card in his deck, but...
Wow.
But yeah, so there you go. So we've had Weekend at Bernie's, alien giving syphilis to everybody, and the government going to hide it. So
no, they're going to tell us about it now.
Yeah, now they're going to tell us all about it.
This is the first step. Yeah, this 128% is the first admittance.
Well, there you go. So we've had another banner week here.
You heard it here first.
And that's and that is What's Fucked.
What the fuck? What the fuck?
What the fuck is that?
Alright. So, now that the super interesting stuff is out of the way, let's just talk something basic about motorcycles. Mm. So, I can say for myself, motorcycles, the only interest I've ever had is when I was a kid in of riding a motorcycle or getting one and stuff like that, but I think it was more... It just, when you're a kid, it just looks like the...
Action hero.
Yeah, it's just the super coolest thing you've ever seen.
Well, you would have been right around that time of, like, Evel Knievel, right?
Oh, yeah.
In the 80s, Rad.
Oh,
right?
Yeah,
like,
man.
Or the BMX movie, right? And you're, like, riding your bike, and you're like, well, I could do that on a dirt bike, right? And
oh,
like,
yeah. But again, it's just that fascination when you're a kid, or just motorcycles in general, and then...
Well, they go fast, and it's something that looks like you could take care of it already, because, like, you don't drive until you're a teenager, right?
Yeah, but even then,
you
like...
You ride bikes from when you're, like, well, as soon as you can ride bikes.
Like, I was riding a bicycle, personally, like, I was riding a bicycle by 5-6 years old.
Oh, yeah.
I was on a bicycle, two-wheel, no training wheels, wheels, like, and it was like, once I learned no training wheels, I was like, boom, like, I was on my bicycle all the time. That was the coolest thing to do, and I would be like, oh, I didn't want to come home. When the street lights
came on. We're
going
to go ride bikes.
I'm going to go ride my bicycle around and it's the same path, but we're riding around, we're like racing each other and pretending we're in a race. And
Like that. But then again, it's just that illusion when you're a kid where you think, like, this is my motorbike, so to speak, and, like, you know, you're racing everybody. Mm-hmm. And then you're taking off the sweet jumps that were curbs or whatever wood ramp you'd make up that's like half a foot off the ground. Because, you know, back then we didn't exactly have the X Games. Yeah. But we never had, like, X Games and stuff like that. Like, we had, like you said, like, Evel Knievel was kind of like the... Kind of the only thing that was jumping anything, especially with motorcycles. Like, we never had what
the
culture
is
today.
Yeah, in the early 90s, you were looking at the beginning of, like, massive skateboard culture. And then that led to X Games becoming bigger, which then lets motocross and, like, BMX and stuff get bigger well.
Yeah, that like, motocross, and there were still always... There's always been motorcycle racing.
Right? Oh, yeah.
And that's always been around, but, I mean... And
that, like, jumping stuff's been around for years and years. It's just... When skateboard got so big.
Yeah, with X Games, it was a really big thing for that, right? Like, X Games, as soon as that was even thing, and they incorporated Supermoto and the stunt cross, right? Like
those
where they're
crazy.
Doing those, like now they're now like the things that they're doing, that they're doing like triple backflips.
Well,
on a dirt bike.
Oh, yeah.
You know, not even holding the bike, and they're still doing it. Like, and
they're not even on the bike.
Yeah,
they're not, watch, I can jump up.
They're just floating in the air, and they're like doing,
Pink's,
you know, 200.
Pink's husband, Carrie Hart,
yes.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
He broke every bone in his body.
Yeah.
Yep.
Every single bone. And it was just like, because some of those tricks they would do, like he created a lot of the tricks that they do now anyways. But like the Superman, I think that's the one that he didn't land properly once, and he basically just face-planted into the mud.
Pancaked into the ground.
And that was...
Travis Pastrana, he's another like, big advocate of that, started a part of that whole thing. And I remember seeing the one video where he went off the ramp, and then when he landed awkwardly on the top of the ramp, and it literally looked like he just hit flat, but then it looked like all of a sudden he dropped, and he was like stiff like a board, and he wouldn't move. He ended up breaking his back and doing all this damage to his back, right? But that's that thrill, that thrill of that speed and that rush that you get from doing like the tricks, or even being out on the road and like riding and you're free, it can really de-stress you. It can really like shake off the bad karma, bad juju that we might be carrying.
Probably liken it for us to be like skating. Like when we're flying and like you're not really like nothing slowing you down, you're just kind of going.
Oh, yeah. Like I was going
to
be like,
that's got to kind of feel like that, where you're just going at a speed that you couldn't normally get to. You have like kind of, and you're free to move freely in this space.
Totally. And you get that feeling of like when you do like a long sweeping turn on the ice, right? You get that swoop, right? You get that feeling that kind of like a roller coaster when you're going around a curvy bend, right? You get that swooping kind of feeling, and that, like, you feel the G-force, right?
Yeah.
And that's that feeling that you're, okay, you're here, you're grounded on that ground. You can really feel it in your body.
Yes. So what made you want to get a bike?
Like personally, like I grew up like I loved motorcycles. Motorcycles was always in my family. My dad, my uncle, they both used to build Harleys and ride bikes and stuff. And being around it all the time, it was like I wanted to be on a dirt bike, because I was always on my bicycle.
Mm-hmm.
I always wanted a motorcycle, and I wanted a dirt bike because you can learn how to react. Right, so this is where it's like I've always said that it is good to learn on a dirt bike, because you have to learn how to react to the terrain, right? So it's a lot more physically demanding.
Yep.
Because you literally have to hold the bike in position, you up on it, but you're like a mountain bike, right? But the G forces when you're going so much faster, it's a lot more work, right? But then that teaches you, when the bike is doing something, how to react. So then going onto the road, You're going just to stop going, right? And kind of thing. So you when it comes down to a situation where you need to react, you're already comfortable to know how to react.
Yeah.
When need be, right? But it becomes natural, second nature, right? It's muscle memory, right?
So at what point do you, if you're going from essentially like just like a two-wheeled normal bicycle to dirt biking, so when is the next point, like after that, where you're comfortable? Because now, because you didn't go to, or did you go to like a sport bike, or did you go to a heavy bike?
No, I the way I went about it, it was really realistically was the best way to go, like in
insurance
Canada, like in Ontario.
Yeah,
it was the best way to get it. But it also, I could kill two birds with one stone. So I got like a vintage motorcycle. So I got like an 82. KZ750, and I made it a working, properly functioning motorcycle, but I learned and cut my teeth, per se, as they say, on that. So now I can ride on the city streets, but now I could take that bike and ride it in a suburb where there's a lot of stop signs. But that's okay, because I'm not going to want to go past one or gears, second or third, you know, past second gear. Then I won't feel comfortable.
Yeah.
So then I can get that feeling of stopping and going in a small subdivision.
Yeah. Right?
And doing circles or doing rights and lefts and like doing, you can practice things.
But so you went bicycle, and then you went long time away from bicycle.
Bicycle, and then.
Then you went to that bike.
Yeah, and then I went to this bike.
Then you went to this bike.
And then I went, to this bike, because then I ended up, so I had the Cowie for about a year. It was a vintage bike. I let it go, and then when I had my M2, I ended up picking up the cruiser, the Victory 2016 Victory Gunner, and that was that I got that over, but it was like I insured, it was being insured with a license.
Yeah.
Right. And with the graduated system, it's so difficult that like I, once I got my M2, it was like,
you don't want your nice bike until you have your,
yeah. Again, yeah. You ideally get, like, you can get it in your M2, but if you know, M2 to go to M, but I mean, generally, and a lot of the time does depend on the bike. If you're riding a sports bike, it doesn't matter how old you are. It's generally going to be really high.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? It's going to be very, very high. Cruisers, not as high, but it also depends on where you live. How likely is it to be stolen? How often is this type of motorcycle an accident?
So it's more on tune with like how the car insurance works. It's like those are things are kind of what it's based on. Where you said like sports bike is more based on the fact is I think the fatality rate between the two bikes, the sport bike is like night and day. It's like apparently
it's a different style of riding. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're trying to go as fast as humanly possible. You guys are trying to have a nice time, like ride and enjoy the ride. And
for the most part, for the most part, yeah, like that's what all like every guy I've ever ridden with is like they just loved the feeling of going and like relax. It's like I don't like that idea of lane splitting. Like to me, I'm like I think that's not safe to me.
When I lived out west.
And the law.
And in Ontario, it's the law. You can't lane split. But
when I went out west, there was a guy out there that I knew who bought a Honda CBR 1000.
Yeah.
And they made the comment, they're like, you couldn't even get that insured in Ontario.
No.
Like, it just cost you so much money. It'd be so prohibitive. Like, you just wouldn't even bother. But in Alberta, their system works the way that every normal system should work, which is that they insure... What do we insure? The driver or the vehicle?
So we just stands right now.
Yeah.
Anyone can take your car, but then it goes under that vehicle's insurance, essentially.
So we're insuring the vehicle and the value of the vehicle. They insure the driver, and the driver's.
But we do also have that too, though, because there's certain instances where they'll say like, "We'll insure you, but we'll only insure you on this vehicle. You can't drive any other vehicle."
Whatever it is out there, it is considerably cheaper. Like his insurance for the year was $400.
Yeah,
and that's like and most people's like monthly.
I'm just worried if I'm flip flopping it.
Yeah.
They insure the bike, not the rider. In Ontario, we insure the rider, not the bike.
Which makes sense because
or
maybe it's the other
you're
way
counting on human error in Ontario or something.
Yeah. I think, or it might be the other way in Alberta. It's you're insuring the rider, not the bike.
Either way, right? It's considerably cheaper.
Yeah, like, and I think that's what it is. If you have a clean record and you're a good rider out in Alberta, right? Then this is the bike you're insuring. The bike, you're insuring the rider. If the rider's a good driver and doesn't have like a lot of these accidents, tickets, whatever, on his record, then he gets better insurance. But out here, it's like, no, well, it's that bike, and a lot of people get into accidents, and then they go off the bike. So I think Ontario bases it off of the bike, not the rider itself.
Alberta used to be motorcycle heaven in the sense that, I don't know if it still is, but guys would go there, they'd make a ton of money, they'd leave, but while they're there, they'd buy these beautiful motorcycles and like ATVs, dirt bikes, snowmobiles, jet skis, all the toys. They'd buy them, and then they'd go back east, and they'd be like, "I'm not taking this stuff with me." So they'd sell it for like pennies on the dollar, like just to get rid of it, just so they can get a little bit of cash before they leave town and be gone.
So if you're looking for a deal, look in Alberta, but then you got to get it sent over here,
and you got to go to Fort McMurray to pick it up.
At this point, that would actually be considered. That's not a half bad idea. You know, if I can get a $56,000 motorcycle
for like 8 or 9 grand,
for even 20 grand, for 20 grand, okay, it's going to cost me like 5 grand to get it down there from get it that to Ontario. I'm still ahead.
Yeah.
All right. I got a $50,000-$60,000 motorcycle for 20-25.
Yeah.
Right. And then, you know what I mean? Like, that would be worth it.
So it kind of goes to the next part of it, just saying, so when you're getting into biking, essentially, like, and as we've kind of already just touched on it, and you just explained to it, like, the financial aspect of it. So we've covered the insurance aspect. So obviously, I mean, Ontario, we get douched on everything anyway. So that's interesting. But,
yours to discover all of our taxes.
Yes. Welcome. But the second part of that is like when you went to buy a bike. Now, like you said, like you bought used, whereas like would you ever go brand new for something? Or is it similar to like the car market here where it's like if you buy new, the minute you drive it off that lot, it's done. It's like a third of its price.
With motorcycles, if you buy it new, It's going to still retain its value, right? At that point, it's like how many kilometers? Because as long as you don't damage the bike and like and it runs, you can still get pretty top dollar value because it's a solid motorcycle. Like you can get these bikes that Indian has put out a couple of them now of like their Jack Daniels editions, but they only build like 116 of them, or they only build a certain number, and they number each bike. So if you order them, you're lucky if you can get in and get the bike and buy the bike.
Well, right? A lot of bikes like that, they'd probably call in preferred customers first and be like,
No, they raffle it off. They raffle it off, and they kind of like, you want in, you got to put your ticket in, and then if you put it in time, and like, okay, then you can get the bike.
Right? I guess that's the only way to keep it fair.
Yeah, but realistically, it tends to be very expensive. Like, these bikes are...
Well,
like,
again, limited edition. Anything.
Limited edition.
Call me a pessimist, but if Indian knows they've got a guy who's had like five of their bikes...
Oh, well, you would think, right?
They would probably say,
you
should really enter this raffle.
Yeah.
You should definitely enter this raffle.
If you want it, let me know.
Grab ticket number 4. Yeah. Just saying.
I wouldn't be surprised if that happens at all. Totally. But
again, like you said, like the culture that is.
Yeah, because you're always going to find somebody like, no matter, like that, you can still get an 18 or a 14, 2014, 20, an 08 or an 07, and as long as, depending on the make, model, and what's on it and what's done to it, people will be like, oh, it's a stage 3, setup. That means I don't have to touch anything. Okay, now I can customize it myself. Because either way, they generally want to, at least in the cruiser, class, they want to decorate it. They want to make it their
personalize
own.
Yeah.
Personalize it, right? Like, this is, I like my bars up here. I don't like my bars down there. Mm-hmm. I like the blue lights instead of the
blue. We'll get into, to personalizing the bikes as far as, like, what you can do to modify them and stuff. What would be a number that you would say, no, that's too many kilometers on a bike motor? So, like, if you open Auto Trader tomorrow and you're flipping through and you don't know shit about shit when it comes to motors or bikes, and you're like, well, this one's got 5,000 kilometers, this one's got 15,000 kilometers, this one's got 35,000 kilometers.
Yeah. Generally, like, 100 and... Because in Canada, we only generally get six months of real riding in Canada, and it's not a 24-hour. Like, we can't ride...
24-7. We don't
have... It's not like California or something.
Yeah, we don't have that environment.
I wish I lived in California in that sense. I could ride all the time, right? That'd be phenomenal. I would just be like, why do we even own a car?
And you can go out to the flatlands.
Yeah, and like, I would be like, why even own a car? Yeah. I just ride a motorcycle. Screw that, right? But like on most motorcycles, it's like, in kilometers, 250. That's high. But because in Canada, like generally the average person will put maybe 10, 15 at most.
That's, I was going to say, most new bikes that I see that are going up for sale from their first owner, 5 to 15, like 1,000 kilometers.
Yeah. Yeah. You'll have 50,000 kilometers and they're selling.
No, 5 to 15, like 1.5. Like usually.
Yeah. No, I've seen that.
And then they roll through them. Like, maybe it's because they're on the journey that you kind of gotten like close to the end. Like, so you're probably... Like, your dream bike isn't the bike you have, but you really like the bike you have right now.
Yeah.
So, like, they're probably on that same journey, and we're probably catching them at, like, the midpoint where it's like your Kawasaki is this thing that we're looking at from them.
And, like, it's not that, like, I could turn around and I could sell my bike still for about 10K for as it is now, right? Mm-hmm. I could sell it for that, but that's still, like, when I bought it with the upgrades and stuff, that was 16. Right,
16, so it's retained 5. A fair bit of value.
Yeah, and it hasn't dropped that much. And it only had 1,200 kilometers when I first bought it. Right now, it has 36,000 kilometers on it. But that's still just like broken in, like for those type of motors. You just broke in the motor, right? Like I can get another 150 out of it.
Yeah.
Realistically, as long as I do my maintenance and maintain the motorcycle, I can get another. Think about how many summers that is.
Yeah, right? So that was going to lead me to my next part. Is like you said, because we've got a very limited number of riding dates, essentially, in Canada.
Yeah.
So the maintenance and storage for that, because I know you have, you haven't had it for like 15 years or anything like that.
Yeah.
But like for me, once you get the season in, like, has there like anything else? Like, you have to put it into storage or just put it away.
Yeah.
is there like any sort of major cost associated with that? Because I'd imagine you have to have something in it to keep it from seizing over like the next like 6 or 7 months of not riding.
Well, yeah, no, not really. Like there's a lot of different varying opinions on certain aspects, but generally with like depending on the vintage, right? Like if it's an older motorcycle, you're not running premium. Generally, like they might not be running on premium. You got to put in like chemicals, additives into the gasoline. If you're running any fuel with ethanol in it, right? So high octane fuel tends to have ethanol in it. So you need to put something to stabilize the fuel. Mm-hmm. So it's called fuel stabilizer, right? You pour that pour a portion into a full tank, and you make sure that it's running in and in through the system. So that what happens is when the temperature changes mm-hmm. and that it goes cold, the fuel, the ethanol in the fuel will gelatin. It'll
yeah.
turn into like a gel. Right, and then when you go to start it the next season, it won't start because all your injectors
yeah,
and everything
gummed
are
gummed
up with this gel, right? So it just prevents that from happening. Not that it would, but it just reduces the chances. But there's like those things, like, and then having a battery, having your bike on a battery tender, you always got to go in once a week. Everybody thinks you just plug in the tender and leave it. Oh no, you have to like go out once a week, once every 2 weeks,
yeah,
unplug it. Like let it yeah because it's like
charging
sleep.
A battery is,
once you leave you just kill the battery
it's charged it's designed to say shut off power so that it doesn't just keep frying the battery
right
so you go in once a week pull it out let it reset and then put it back in and go oh it needs a little bit of a charge well then you're just constantly charging it and keeping that the life in that battery keeping your tires ideally is in the winter months is trying to keep your tires off the ground if ideal mm-hmm. but if not putting it like on like these foam pads
yep.
that you can get yep. for kids and stuff like you can get yeah, those yeah. and you can like and on concrete don't park it on dirt because if you have dirt there's all this moisture yeah. right and that just comes up and that rots the bike that much faster right because even normally parking the bike it's not good to park it on grass for extended periods of time, right?
Yeah.
If it's gonna be sitting there for longer than 2-3 days, right? Like
like 6 months.
Yeah, 6 months. You're gonna start rotting out the bike, right? Mm. So like having a good dry place to put it. As long as it's dry, temperature ideal, perfect. It would be like a controlled environment, right? As long as you had insulation and heat, that would be ideal. Because if you have to do maintenance or you want to do something cool to your bike, you can, right? But with winter storage and then keeping your tire safe and then you just kind of store it you don't have to run it I don't generally myself because I can't control the temperature it's not in a temperature controlled environment I don't generally like to start it and turn it on and
it's
off
too cold
because it's too cold
yeah.
and then once what happens is even if I still sit there because I'm not running the bike I'm not actually like
giving her
so when I go out to go and it's cold you heat up the bike from the inside out. Now the condensation is happening on not just the outside of the bike, but it's also happening on the inside,
mm-hmm.
right? So that's then it becomes, you're adding water into where the oil is, right? And when you ride it, you want to get it up to temp. Why? Because it'll evaporate the water out of the oil, right? But if you're doing that in winter months, the amount of condensation that can accumulate, depending on temperatures, right? And how hot you're getting and what you're doing with it, you can put a lot of water in there unnecessarily, right?
And then you're just killing it.
You're just doing more damage to your bike than anything, right?
So now we know how to take care of the bike. Like, how do we choose? Like, there's different models. So yours is a cruiser, right?
Yeah.
Yours is more of like, you want to be comfortable.
Yeah,
you're a big dude, so it's a bigger bike.
Yeah,
so
I'm 6'6", 300 pounds, right? Like,
yeah.
A guy even...
He's a large fella.
I'm a big dude, right? So it's one of those, like, for me, like... Even the bike that I have currently is pretty small, even for a guy my size. Like, it looks small. But, like, if you were to sit on my bike if Mike or Chase were to sit on my bike, the bike would look like a big bike.
Yeah.
But because I'm so ginormous, I still make it look small. But, for me, it's like, it really does got to come down to personal preference and comfort. A lot of it can come down to position of your legs.
I was going to say, how's your back with this ride?
With this ride, it's good. I still like, I would like a more of a bagger type of bike, really, street glide, road glide, because they're a little bit bigger. They're a little bit, the cushions, the seats are a little bit more cushiony,
mm-hmm.
but I have more storage space. That for me is like, because I'm doing a lot more longer distance rides, it's a lot better because then I don't have to have a bag. I could just be like, I could fill this saddlebag with this stuff, I could fill that saddlebag with that, and I got this for that, and all my safety gear up at the top, right? Mm-hmm. For my rear box, right? And then, but I could be comfortable and not have to carry all these extra things because it's all just on my bike that I can lock up, right?
Mm-hmm. And what's the difference between saying your bike and like, because I remember I was talking to Rob Baird once mm-hmm. about bikes, and he has a Cafe Roadster.
Okay.
And I was like, I like those. You see them all the time in Europe and stuff. They like kind of have that like that long flat seat.
Cafe racer.
What's the difference between rides? Like he said, that ride would be way harder on your back. Like that yes. cafe thing.
Yeah, the cafe like, would be because it's that whole idea of like they say cafe racers. Well, back in England, there was the actual cafe racers. So that because their motorcycles were never huge. Because they had such tight streets, right? So they would get these little cafe racers, which they can literally whiz around the streets, but they can be quick and nimble and go through. So they would and they would race each other around.
They're light because they don't want to put a lot of shocks on them.
Like, have you ever heard of the Isle of Man?
Yes.
I've heard of the Isle.
Yeah, the Isle. Well, there's an actual iron Isle of Man where you're supposed to do this one track, and it just you can run it so fast. That's where they would do these cafe races, and they just whiz down these things like insane. But that whole seat is designed so that you can literally be lying over. No, you're lying on the gas tank because your handlebars are down here. Your handlebars are way down towards the wheel.
And you're trying to stay as aerodynamic as possible.
Exactly. It's all about aerodynamics, right? And being sleek and like being able to take. That's why like modern super it was Supermoto where they're doing like the actual racing.
Oh, they're right over the top.
Yeah, they're like
yeah, you barely see.
They look like they're a part of the motorcycle, and all you see is their knee come out, and you know back and forth, and all you see is their head bend, and
watch
the
knee come rubber out. Pad go lower.
Yeah,
and, lower
and just grinding.
Like,
and
I don't know about anyone else, man. I watched that, and I shit myself watching it. Like I couldn't even imagine going at those speeds and being like again, like that half inch from the ground. Like if you touch that with your knee, like you're fucked.
Well, they do touch it with their knee. They got that pad.
Yeah, but I'm just saying when hit that wrong. And they,
it's funny, those pads on those suits, because during races, when they're doing it, sometimes you actually have to, when they go in for a pit stop, they can actually, snap in and snap out off the new one, old one, and put in a new one, so they can put new pads on
there. That makes sense.
So it just clicks in and clicks out, so they can put new pads if they're wearing their pads too much, right? So it's like, but it's, that, if you think that's insane, see, look at sidecar motorcycle racing. Sidecar. There's no joke. There's a guy that's the motor, the operator of the bike, and then there's the guy that sits off to the side, and he's the sidecar, and they go around these turns with two people, and they're full out leaning sideways.
So the sidecar guy's like up here somewhere.
No, the sidecar guy ends up leaning so hard, like his feet are all the way out, and he's lying with his head behind the rider, and or vice versa. So if he's going out and they're going to a hard left, right, he's now leaning this way to keep the bike's wheels on the ground.
Won't be trying that.
Right? Yep. That's insane racing when you see it. Even just YouTube sidecar racing, right? And you'll just be like, they're doing that? Are you kidding me?
I'm not shocked that there's, with people doing anything these days, I'm not shocked.
But that's a good segue because it sounds insane. Safety equipment.
Yes.
Because I know that safety is a big thing for you when you're riding this.
Yeah.
Not for you, but I mean just in general.
Well, no, in general, but like Sasha's very serious about it. The way people ride, we'll get to that later, but like the way people ride is a thing.
Yes.
So helmets, obviously. Now, I've seen a lot of designer helmets lately that like look like a baseball cap turned backwards or like
I mean?
Look like Venom's head. And it's like, what are you looking for when you pick up a helmet other than the fit? You know what I mean? Like, well, describe the fit too, though. Yeah, it's a lot like a hockey helmet.
Like, but, okay, yeah. So the love for novelty helmets. When it's novelty, it's a joke, right? Then that means your life is a joke, okay? In my opinion, right? If you don't want to put on at least a helmet that is at least a DOT approved, right?
So that's an important thing.
For me, it is a minimum, and DOT is not even the highest standard. There's the EU standard, which is even greater than the DOT, but at least a DOT approved helmet, you know,
not just something that says like,
yeah, or somebody, yeah, and somebody put a
this
sticker.
Worked good,
yeah, somebody put a sticker on it, right? Or it's not an actual approved, you know, some helmets companies, like I have a Bell helmet, they actually put a DOT sticker on it, but on the inside of the helmet there's a tag, and on the tag it says this is DOT approved, and it's, you know, all guidelines and set things, you know, parameters have been. And so that is, this is a safe product, right? Yeah. Like
so
crepe scenes.
In hockey, if we take a major spill and like our helmet hits the ice with serious impact, they tell us to replace that helmet.
They're yes.
Like, once it's had one hit,
they
like
say,
one real hit, it's gone.
They even say that, like generally, they even say you drop your helmet once, it's toast. Like I like you should not drop your helmet. If you like, even if you accidentally went, oh, and it went bang, 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 it's compromised now. Right, yeah, like
it makes sense.
The risk that you, and then on top of that with the foams, like you should change your helmet once every 5 years,
yep.
No matter what, whether it hasn't you haven't dropped it or nothing, and it's a yep. perfect, you know, you can wash the liners and stuff, and it's fine. That plastic, no matter what, it's in the sun, so it's going to degrade. So yeah, or it's a UV protected plastic. It has foam and. Your head, you sweat. It goes on to the foam on the inside. That slowly but surely over time deteriorates, and the plastic, there's a chemical reaction. The foams in the plastic don't withstand anymore.
Yeah.
So after 5 years, you should change your helmet and get a brand new helmet, because that foam inside the helmet might not necessarily be as foam. You know, like have that same
the protection levels
structure. Yeah, the same structural integrity as it did when it was 5 years new older. Right? Yeah.
How do you feel about electronics and helmets, like the Bluetooth?
I think that honestly, I like especially nowadays.
It's hidden enough that it's not.
Yeah, I think it's a smart thing. It's such a smart thing because you can like I have my comm on my helmet, and mm-hmm. I'm an advocate of since I got it, and it's really weird. I've had full face before, and I've done half. I don't mind. You know, I have to wear earplugs because my bike's loud, but then I can't really listen to music, right?
Yeah.
So I'm like, man, I don't have a bagger where it has speakers on it, so I don't even really care. I'm like, eh. Then I don't get to really listen to music while I ride. So, I get a comm set just so I could put it on my head and I could listen to music. That's all I really wanted to hear, like Backcountry Road, and you're listening to, you know, Metallica One, and as you're ripping down a country road, and just, you know, you're just like, you know, you're like, yo, that's so cool, right? Like, and it's so fun. But
this is one of those moments you've been trying to get to.
Yeah. You're like, oh, like huh? You just get to like, and you can just roll through it, and you just don't even have to think about it, and like, mm-hmm. you just enjoy the music, enjoy the scenery, and just rush of rolling, right?
Yeah. So and that kind of goes into this thing. It's like, well, like you said, like when you grew up. With motorcycles being around mm-hmm. now, how is it different now from when you were younger? Like, and I know you kind of just alluded to that. We're saying like that freedom of being on the road, and like if we have the music, like the ideal scenery, the ideal road, mm-hmm. like is
it's and they say like it's very like zen oriented, right? It is literally that. It's you get out on the road, and when you're just, it doesn't matter how stressed out you are, you just go. Out there, and you can get out there and let it go. Like it's like they call it wind therapy. It's such a common phrase in the motorcycle community that they're like, I need wind therapy. It's pissing me off. I'm just gonna go ride my bike. Like no. Whatever. Like I have all these problems. Ride my bike, and then when you're so focused on your riding, right? Mm-hmm. That like I gotta do this safely. I'm you know like looking around and the twisty road, then. You know, you're not thinking about what wasn't stressing you out, right? Mm-hmm. And then you can at least maybe come to it when you're a little less emotional, a little bit more in control, and then come back to it and rethink about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Give you a fresh, clean slate and try to still figure out whatever that issue may be, but, you know.
So for you, it's therapeutic.
Yeah, I find it very therapeutic myself. Like, and the camaraderie, you know, with my MC... It's a wonderful thing. We do a lot of positive charitable work.
There's a good segue,
right?
So yeah, so then we'll get into it. So you because what you haven't been in part of this MC very long.
No.
So but I don't. So for me, I know for myself, like obviously there's like lots of material, and I've learned stuff from you.
Mm-hmm.
But give us a rundown of what it's like to be part of like a motorcycle club, because I know a lot of people. You know, when they think motorcycle club,
Sons of Anarchy,
Hell's Angels, like these are the things that people like immediately gravitate to. So it's that whole mentality of they're all, you know, they're just a gang of people. It's just drugs, guns, rock and roll. You know, sleeping around, doing whatever. Yeah. But I mean, like, I'm sure, like, you know, there's always a bit of truth to certain things, but again, there's that association. But now, being that you are actually in one now, tell us about not only just the club, but like what it's all about, essentially, or like what's an actual point of view that isn't just, again, like the gun violence,
Sons of Anarchy kind of thing.
Right? I enjoyed the show, don't get me wrong, but I mean, obviously, it's an exaggerated version of everything.
Our MC, we are all about positivity on two wheels. 13.5% being, you know, you have 12 jurors, one judge, and half a chance to keep out of jail, right? So don't put yourself in a situation where you're going to catch a case, where you're going to catch a federal or an indictment or something. You're going to jail. Don't do that. That's frowned upon in our club, right? Like, we abide, we put it in a diamond because we really hold that close, in the sense that we don't want our members going around causing, you know, criminal stuff. It's very frowned upon. We don't want to be involved. We want to help our community. We want to do charitable work. We want to.
So, what are some of the charity rides you guys do? We've done stuff. You did one not long ago.
Yeah, we do. I've done one for Every Child Matters. We did the River Run, which was for the food bank on the Six Nations Reserve, right? And it's about helping your community, and it's not just one community. It's every community, everywhere you go, always spread positivity, be respectful, right? And help the people that are around you as much as you can, because it's very heavy, like, in our club, that, like, everything you do affects seven generations, right? And it's an Indigenous-based club, right? So a lot of the stuff is based off of, you know, Indigenous culture. It's named Red Rum MC, but I'm out of the Six Nations chapter, and we all share the same blood. Like, we're all one with the earth, kind of thing, right? We share this land. It doesn't matter what your creed is, right? I'm first generation Canadian, right? But it's the fact that we want to spread that positivity out there. But we're not a 1% club. That's a different. That's a whole different vein of thing. Like, we're neutral, we're peaceful, right? We don't go to look
to cause problems.
That would be the greatest way to we're Switzerland. Chilling. And a lot of the stuff, it can all be found on the internet. And like, Red Rum is everybody's, oh, it's Stephen King, no, it has nothing to do with that at all, right? It's actually a drive from Red Drum, right? The heartbeat of the earth. Right?
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so it was Red Drum, but then they changed it to Red Rum, right? And then it's not spelt backwards, right? So they're like, oh, it's murder backwards. Like, no, it's not, right? And like, just because of one movie.
Again, which is the association with being a club, right? Yeah, so they say Red Rum murder backwards.
But there's a lot of crazy stuff that happens in 1% world, which is like literally kind of like common knowledge. It's not like, us being Canadian.
Go on the History Channel. Watch all about the Montreal Hells Angels.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, even in our generation, we knew about the Montreal Hells Angels.
The war between them and the rock machine,
and all that stuff that was going on. So it was like, it was there, and I being around the community, not ever being involved, for me it was, I already knew the culture. There's a lot of rules and a lot of, like, it's not like Sons of Anarchy, right? There is a lot of rules that have to be followed, and every kind of motorcycle club has their own sets of bylaws, and these are things that you can and cannot do, right?
So when you guys would go somewhere, say like a, pick a thing, like Friday the 13th. So you guys are going to ride from Hamilton or wherever down to Dover, you're going to ride in formation, because that's the way that you see the clubs ride.
Yep.
And I know we've
just
had...
It's not necessarily just clubs, right? It's how everyone rides.
Well, sure, they should, but this is... So we've had conversations in the past that where you've informed me that, like, there's ways to ride in that formation, and, like, there's things that you need to know about riding in that formation. Yeah, like, you can't just kind of, like, whoop, okay, I'm in.
Yeah, right. And it's like, it's generally a faux pas if you're on a motorcycle to try to pass another... If you see an MC riding, like that's generally frowned upon, right? Like... Depending on the run, you get the wrong group of guys, they don't like it. Well, now you got a pack of motorcycles that are angry at you, right? You got to have that respect. Yeah. And that's, to them, that's the way that they feel. They need that respect.
But will they let you pass if you're like riding behind them and it's just one person, and then they're like, they can kind of see it? Maybe they'll like open up and let you through or something like that?
No. At that point, you would just hang back. Right? You can just hang back
and stretch yourself.
Yeah, you can hang back, stretch, let them go. When they turn off, let them turn off, and then you can go, right? Mm-hmm. You don't. It's a respect thing. You're not trying to be disrespectful by, like, if I'm going to run past a full pack, like that could look like I'm being rude, right? I could even wave and stuff, but that's still not polite.
Yeah.
Right. Like, so there's etiquette, right? There's like that's the thing. Like, there's so much etiquette and rules and bylaws, and like, you can't do this, you can't do that. Like, you shouldn't be doing this, you shouldn't be doing that, right? But everybody has to understand that, like, it was based off of a military. It was the motorcycle club started from former guys Air coming Force from guys. Yeah, you guys.
Well, I think it was Air Force.
Yeah, it was guys coming back from World War II, and they needed that camaraderie. They wanted that, so they got into motorcycles and stuff like that, right? And so it's very military based in that sense, right? So that's why you see these militant clubs, 1%, they live outside law, right?
Oh yeah, which I think is funny because most like kind of groups of people that I know of anyway are all. Primarily like in law enforcement, and almost all of them have their own bike. And it was one of those things where it's almost like a rite of passage where if you worked for like a certain police agency and stuff like that, like you'll see that group from that unit, every one of them has a bike.
Yeah.
And they always like every whenever day off they have, like that group of people, they'll go out and they'll do their ride. But it's just funny that, and when you say it's military, I didn't even think about that.
And I don't know if this is still the case, but it used to be like exclusively Harley Davidson's that they would ride too.
And the cop
always had Harleys.
Yeah. That's exactly it. Every one of them, if they don't have a Harley, like they're kind of like, well, you can't ride with us. And I was just like,
that was a stigma. There was for a long time, even like with the bigger dominant clubs, it's just common knowledge that they would say, like, no, you're not allowed unless you have a Harley. Mm-hmm. Right. And then, as time has progressed, right, then there's other companies like, you know, Victory, Indian, Polaris, basically, right?
Okay, sorry, this just dawned on me. So, say you do own a Harley, and you're part of one of these clubs, but you also like sports bikes.
That's fine.
You're allowed to have, like...
Yeah, yeah.
You ride the sport bike away from the club anytime.
Yeah, yeah. You have to think about in this sense, like... You know, I might be in a like, there's guys that are, like, there's a mandatory, you have to have this... Usually, you have to have a bike of a certain size. Mm-hmm. And it has to be a V-twin, right? Some clubs say it's a make and model, but it has to be within a certain CC range, right? Like, it has to
be... So you can keep up.
Yeah. There are clubs that do that. There's clubs that, you know, say, well, no, you only Harley, or they can say only Victory, or only Polaris, or, you know, like, they can make those calls, but that's all, again, bylaws, and they can setting their rules, right, and, like, this is how we want it, but that's not unheard of. It used to be a thing. Now they've lightened it up, because, you know, there were nice bikes like Victory that came out. They had, Polaris had Victory. That was a very popular bike amongst clubs, right, because it was, like, it wasn't a Harley, and it was different, right, and it was, like, because everybody had the electric glide, everybody had the street glide, or the road glide, right? They all had, everybody's bikes pretty much look the same, right? Well, now you can get something that looks completely out of the shell, but still can keep up with these Harleys, right? So, and still do pretty much the exact same things with them, right? So, and again, all comes down to, oh, I get to dress my bike the way I want it to look, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's the
fun. I will say that motorcycles are way more customizable than any other vehicle we use, really. Like, you can do a ton of modification to a car, but at the end of the day, it's the same fucking car.
Yeah, and I, like, with motorcycles, it's more of fabrication. Like, if you could fabricate, you know, the lever for your brake handle, it's such a simple thing. You're just making a lever, right? Not hard, but you can do it. Well, if you do something cool, like, maybe you want to have, like, a little
twister
engraving
on it. That's
where you
got those shows, right? Like, yeah. Orange County Choppers and Jesse James and his West Coast Choppers.
They're actually fabricating, like, they're welding a steel grid onto a tank, and it's just aesthetic.
Yeah.
Right? It's just aesthetic, but if you, when you chrome polish that and you put this kind of paint on it, man,
yeah,
it looks
sharp.
Really cool, right? And you'll never have another bike that looks like that. But realistically, how practical is that? Right?
Like, well, it's no different from
it's
like
pretty. Ooh, it's pretty.
Well, again, is that what you were alluding to? Like, you know, you can customize like any car. Like, I mean, look at the whole entire like Fast and Furious. See, like, some of these cars are like fucking ridiculous.
Yeah,
like,
I saw even about that series the other day, and it's been living rent free in my brain ever since. It was, how the fuck did we get through the entire Fast and Furious movies and no one ever stopped for gas?
No,
they're always topped up, and it's not even so much they're full of gas. Like, they always have like extra, because they're like, oh, I'll just get rid of my gas tank and blow up this other thing, and it'll send me into space.
Quick, switch to the NOS. It could just run on pure NOS. No fuel needed.
Jump into the the trunk. Why? I have another gas can.
So we can you can mod a ton of stuff on bikes. We know that. But like stuff that beginners could mod. Well, not beginners, because obviously you don't want to do stuff like you.
I mean, when you're a beginner, don't mod anything. Just spread
but like I would say like. You know, even with a professional, if you say your buddy who's really good with bikes and has done a bunch of bikes himself, handlebars maybe over fuel tanks and like, you know what I mean? Like, so what's the beginner kind of mod stuff that people, mirrors, I guess would be.
Yeah. Like, generally people will go for like mirrors, pegs, grips, seats, right? It's a lot of, superficial sometimes, fenders. No, that's when you start getting into bigger money.
Okay.
Right. That's what, like when you start looking into wheels and gaps and stuff like that, that's when you can get a little tricky. You got to make sure you have the right rim, the right tire, the tire will fit within the, space right between the fender frame. And the wheel, right? Yeah. Like, I can get away with on my bike, it's supposed to be a 130 60 16, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I put a 150 80 16, so I increased the size of the tire, a little
bigger on it?
But I went with a bigger fat tire, so it matches my rear tire. Right, they're in the same tire, but just because that size generally should be on the rear, not the front. But I have the same size on the front and the back. Just gives it a really cool look. Like, and then when I'm running on the highway, I got a lot of surface area to cover to make my turns. Right, so I like them because I can grip. I'm grabbing the road as I roll and rotate because my bike doesn't have like big giant bags and a fairing and stuff. I'm handlebars to the fist to the wind. You know, I get pummeled by wind, rain, whatever. I get no relief. I get no relief.
What's it like when you got like the no windshield? So it's just like you're just taking
straight all of it. It's brutal because I'm a big dude.
Bugs too, like
bugs. Yeah. So this is another reason why I absolutely like loved my full faced helmet. Right. I'm like, I don't have to eat insects anymore. But on top of that, it's like, you know, when it rains, it's like I don't have it hitting my face. I can see for the most part. Unfortunately, it's like if it's a lot of rain, you can't just wipe
pull
it
over.
Away. Right?
Pull over under the bridge.
Pull over, and you're just like, you know, go under a bridge, hang out for a bit, right? But being pummeled in the chest is tough. It's tough because like my arms they sit to my shoulders. My fists would be straight out. My arm would be straight out, but my fist to about my shoulder height. And even that, when you're doing, you know, 130, 140, okay, you know, not necessarily legal, but backcountry, you know.
Yeah, well,
you're, you know, no.
There's no around. Judgments here. We're not going to arrest you.
You know, you're whizzing down the highway at, you know, $150, right? And you're just getting all of the wind into your chest. So after a while, it's just like you're like, your head gets knocked around. And your head, you know, is jarring around. You're like, you become like a giant parachute, right? And you can feel all the wind hitting your chest. On a hot summer day, if you're in a t-shirt,
that's probably
it's delightful. It's like a full body massage all over, and you can feel fingers going everywhere. It's great. It's very, very cool. Like sort of like at that point, it's like it doesn't matter how hot it is because it just feels great. The wind passing through you, it's very, that's super soothing. That's cool. But then there's times where it's like when it's colder out or if it is raining, having that fairing would be a little nicer just because you're just a little less wet. Right, a little less wet. And then like when you are, or if you're tired and you're riding, you, like all day like that, that's so physically demanding. You get exhausted. Like I got a big ride. I'm going to Sault Ste. Marie.
Jesus, that's just a long drive.
Yeah, I'm going to Sault Ste. Marie Thursday. No,
it should be, it's around probably 18, close to 11.
It's 18 to 19
hours.
No, to us? No.
We're going to Treaty 3, which is between the Manitoba and
Ontario. I thought you meant border. From here. I was like, no.
From here, it's like it's 10 hours. We're going 10 hours for one day and then stopping for the night and then going another 8 the next day. And by the next 8, we'll be there. So that's 18 hours. Right, of actual like,
right,
you know, butt in seat, you know, going right, and like everybody's like, okay, this is already gonna suck. So like, this is like, okay, when we do our stops, we're gonna be really quick about these stops. Like, let's just get this done. Like, suck it up and let's aim for that hotel as fast as we can. So we're gonna try to do 1,000 kilometers in 10 hours. So we have to do 100 kilometers in 1 hour. Minimum.
What's your dream ride? Like, what's the one you want to do? Like, if you could pick a long distance
I'm going to do and the entire Trans-Canada Highway.
Well, no, like you, and you don't necessarily need to stay in North America. Like,
yeah.
In this circumstance, you could pay to ship your bike kind of anywhere in the world.
Where would be cool to ride?
The Autobahn.
It's
a dream.
Yeah. as that would be pretty darn cool if you could get like a really big bike and do that. But I mean, like, I don't know. At that point, it's the speed. I'd almost be more comfortable doing that kind of speed on a closed course.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like
you're dealing with less idiots.
Yeah, yeah. It's the variables are a little bit more controlled. Right?
Yeah, I know
that. My opinion.
Billy Connolly did Route 66 like the whole way. On a three-wheeler motorcycle.
Oh, okay.
Because he was old.
What are they, like Can-Ams or a trike?
Like a trike. But okay. Like monster. It basically looked like a drag racer that somebody had put a motorcycle on the front of.
Oh, okay.
And then he rode that all the way down Route 66 in the States. Oh,
that's kind of cool. Yeah, I've done a lot of like big long rides.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like... I would mind going maybe to like Ireland. I believe it's Ireland or Scotland.
Yeah.
Where they do the Isle of Man, right? Like I'd like to do that. Like go to certain places like in Scotland and Ireland, and
mm-hmm.
I wouldn't mind maybe riding like around England, the UK. I wouldn't mind trying that out. Not even on a cruiser. I'd probably do it more on like an adventure bike.
Yeah,
right. Like that would be kind of cool, where they have like hard boxes and stuff. That'd be a little bit more practical.
My old tattoo artist always wanted to take a roll, like a bed roll, and do get dropped off in the Carpathian Mountains, like Transylvania.
Yeah,
and ride all through like Castle Dracula and all back like,
oh,
through
that'd
there.
Be cool.
And,
yeah, yeah. And like it's all like enduro track
pretty
stuff,
much,
right?
Yeah.
And it's like they have knobby tires on it, and you have to ride in the gravel and like get through here. But like that would be kind of mean.
I meant to ask you about this. So it's a thing, right? When you cut your grass and the grass goes onto the road, and you should blow it off the road because the grass makes the...
That's huge. Like that is probably one of my personal pet peeves, is when you people are mowing their lawn and then they blow it onto the street and they're just like, whatever, the city's gonna deal with it. That's not the point. When you're going over that grass, depending on how much grass it is, if it's thick grass, that's like all of a sudden you're running on a whole bunch of wet leaves.
Yeah.
Right? It becomes... Have you ever stepped on like a pile of wet leaves and you can like whoop? Even with you standing on it with just your own personal weight, you can slip sometimes, right? Mm-hmm. Now imagine that with a 500 or 600 pound motorcycle that rolls over it while your wheels just want to come right from underneath you, right? Mm-hmm. Like if it happens to be on a slight angle, or you know, you can... Your whole bike can come out from underneath you. So that grass that gets blown onto those roads becomes so dangerous, and like you want to avoid even having the grass on, like, because you don't know how thick that is. Mm-hmm. When you're going at, when you're doing, let's say, even 60 kilometers an hour, it's not that easy to... Oh, okay, it's not that thick. Right. Well, too late. You're on top of it.
Yep.
Right. You're on top of it already. Right.
And now you're sliding.
Yeah. And now you're like, oh, and even today, I on my ride in, same thing. I came down Sulphur Springs, but I was on Sulphur Springs. Yeah. And I was like, bad decision. But I was like, oh well, I'm here. What am I going to do? Right. I have to work through it. That's where my knowledge of riding dirt bikes was like, okay, I know how to control the bike. I know how to operate the bike, but now I can like it's gravelly and it's potholy everywhere. It's like, it is all over the place.
It's a crappy driving a car.
Yeah, yeah. So I was like, my bike, I was like, oh, stupid move. But I'm like, whatever. I can handle it, but I was just like having that knowledge, that feel, like learning how to react. It really does help. Yeah. It helps.
There's some streets in Hamilton that are bad to drive in a tank.
In a tank, yeah. Anything down Barton between Parkdale and, I'd say the Red Hill.
Yeah.
Parkdale and Red Hill.
Some of the potholes are like, it would be impressive if it wasn't such a fucking giant disaster.
Yeah.
Like, how did you manage to rip that much gravel out of the ground with one tire?
There's been times where I've been like, I'm rolling down those roads and I'm trying to dodge and weave the potholes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, man, I really hope there isn't a cop, you know, like looking at me thinking I'm like drunk or intoxicated. Yeah. I'm like, no, I'm just literally dodging potholes, man. Like, I'm trying to keep not from hitting them.
Or when the city of Hamilton does a new sewer and I think there's somebody in the city who really likes volcanoes.
Yeah.
No, I just want everything to look like little volcanoes.
There's a couple manholes by my place that they just redid, and yeah, it's so raised up that even on my car and my motorcycle I have to like go out of the way just because I'm like, if I hit it too hard, I'm like, man, that's going to really bang out the car. And I'm like, on my motorcycle, it already sits low enough. I'm like, I don't want to
break my bike. I missed it yesterday on the way to your house for that thing. And so I just saw it last time. Yeah, like, oh, shit. And I still heard it go like smack, smack. And I was like, oh, these motherfuckers.
Yeah, I know. As soon as you said that, I'm like, I know where you're talking about. I got mad about that the other night. Like, so they put this in. They don't even know how to properly do the road. Yeah. I see how it is.
Yeah.
You're going to have to pay to get that done again.
Well, it's settled. Well, then why didn't you prepare for that if you knew it was going to happen?
Yeah.
Shut up. You don't work for the city.
That's just their answer for everything.
Again,
you don't work for the city. Shut up. Did you hear, actually, I could have used this as a what's fucked, but Hamilton, somebody just got into power and they've proposed a 50% cut to the police budget.
Oh, wow.
Oh, that's going to go over well.
50%. Yeah. Like, don't get me wrong. I think that there are probably a little bit of dollars here and there. You know, like every organization runs.
There's anything that you could save a couple of dollars, but not like
50% of the money.
No, and especially with such a large city, like
you're going to lose cops.
That's ridiculous.
You're going to lose more than just cops.
Let me tell you.
But again, there people already complain now. Like there's no response. There's this, that, and the other. I'm like, okay, we'll take away half the force. See how that goes.
Do you guys find that like dealing with cops on motorcycles fairly?
With dealing with like police officers, we generally as an MC don't have much problem on average.
I just mean though, like riding a bike in general, do you find like
leave
you guys alone more? Like not the MC necessarily, but like motorcycle enthusiasts.
For the most part, the police don't generally hunt. Or like hunt for anything per se, but like
because I got to figure pulling you over is a little bit more risky than pulling over somebody else, right? Like,
well, yeah.
You're like, an exposed air vehicle.
If you have a three piece patch on your back.
Yeah.
There's already a stigma.
Oh, there's that. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's already, and it doesn't matter whether you're a 1% or you're, a neutral club like ours, right? You can still get pulled over because they're gonna bug us and say, "What do you know? None of your fucking business."
Yeah.
Because you know what? I don't know, and it's none of my business. That's them.
What I don't know, I can't testify to in court.
Yeah. Right? If I don't know, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. None of my business. Right? And you want anything from me? Not gonna happen. You're not gonna get nothing out of me. Sorry, because it's not my business. Mm-hmm. Right? Like it's never been my business. So no. But they'll hassle. They've hassled neutral clubs, right? Just because they have a three-piece.
I won't even
because they know that we have to be okay to be in the area.
Yeah.
And the rare occasions where I've been out with people who live in that other side of the world, other side of the law, I won't even stand around if they're going to tell stories.
Yeah.
Because what I don't know, I can't tell.
Yeah, that's
right. You know what I mean? Like, no matter how much kind of pressure they put on, because everybody's got a button. Everybody's got a button somewhere. You might not know where it is, but it's there. And if the cops find it and they press hard enough, so if I don't know, I can just sit there and be like, I don't know. Yep. You can say all this horrible shit. I don't know.
Yep.
So that's usually how I just
live. It's a great way to think because I grew up around it and it was always that like, I don't know nothing. I don't know nothing. I don't know. I don't know. Who is this person? What? I can play it dumb and then just that's all I need to do is I don't know nothing. Because it is none of my business and I would never say anything, right? I personally would never say anything because now that weights on my shoulders, right? But if I don't know, then exactly. I can't get in trouble for something I didn't know.
Yep.
Right? If it happens, it happens. Like,
I have one more safety question for you. Mm-hmm. So I don't think your vest has a back, like a spine protector.
No. This vest doesn't, though I can put it in, I can get it made to have protectors.
Would you recommend spine protectors?
Yes, realistically, nowadays with the safety equipment, there's so much stuff that's out there that you can get like pants that already have pads in them, right? Mm-hmm. They'll have back pads, they'll have hip pad, they'll have,
I might get those just for my day-to-day life.
Yeah. they come with washable pants. Right, that are all padded and they're really smart and comfortable. And you like getting leather jackets with padding is always smart because it's just going to prevent if you fall off. Right, you're less likely to break your elbow tip
and road rash and all that.
Right, and road rash that is like honestly ruthless. Road rash is way more bad than people think. You can peel, depending on your speed, you can peel the skin off you can grind it all the way through the bone in like seconds.
Yep.
Right? So this is why like wearing, I say like proper boots, And when I say proper boots, not just Doc Martens. No. Not
they just won't like, save your life?
No, they won't. Because they will still eventually grind through. But you can get like proper motorcycle boots where there's actual proper ankle supports, where it actually like has a cup for either side of your ankle, the two balls that are on the side of your ankle. And that's so that if the bike falls and it falls onto your leg...
It doesn't crush it.
It doesn't crush it, but it also gives that extra protection because it's a hard plastic on the inside.
So it's scraping on the ground instead.
It'll scrape and it won't necessarily like grind off, right? You do that with shoes, right? You can grind an ankle off in like, you know, 30, 40 feet on asphalt, right? With the weight of a motorcycle on top, right? So I totally agree. Safety equipment is like... very smart, super, super smart. I'm an experienced rider. That's also a personal preference and choice. When it's really hot out, I don't like wearing a lot of safety equipment. I wear key things, though. Gloves,
always helmet.
Helmet, proper shoes, and long pants. Not like jogging pants, no. You should get like proper riding pants where it's like proper denim, right? Ideally. And if you can wear chaps, great, wear chaps. Because that's even better, because that's even more protection from against road rash. Ideally, wear chaps. But it's hot and it sucks and yeah. You know everybody.
Can you ride only my shorts? Wear chaps?
You
know,
you could, and the studded leather thong.
Yeah, geez, just asking for a friend.
Yeah.
So weird that it came up the other day when I was talking to them.
It's like, do you have a motorcycle? No, I just asking about chaps. No reason. So for you, Sash, have you had any like big scares on your bike?
Yeah, I've had like scares, close calls. Where I've never, knock on wood, I've never been in an accident myself, but there's been times where I've scared, like, things like I lost my balance, I locked up my rear wheel going on a downward right sweep on, like, you know those tar roads with their tar pebble?
Yep.
Right? Well, the tar was, it was more tar than pebble, and it was a super, super hot day. But
so
then
it's melting down.
It was nice and soft. But then what happened is there was a quick flash rain, right? And it cooled off that tar really, really quickly. So then they made the top surface almost slightly hard, but with the water running on it, rubber onto the rubber, it ended up just slipping, right? And then it was just super soft and squishy, and it swung me back and forth both ways. I was only doing 40 kilometers an hour, but I literally like whipped the tail of the bike back and forth and had to stand on my two feet, stood up and slid on this, like it was like I was on ice, and I had to direct the bike into the side shoulder, onto a gravel side shoulder. Now that was close, and I was coming into an intersection where it was I had a stop sign. That other road didn't have a stop sign. So I'm like, if I didn't react the way I did, again, from just being on a dirt bike and knowing, it was like I got that little like extra knowledge, and it was like, okay, react. Well, if I have to, now I can go like this. I can throw the motorcycle, and I just buckle, tuck and roll, all right? Buckle, and it'll stop me from going into the intersection at least, right? But I can ditch the bike. I can get rid of the bike and let the bike go do its thing, and then I'll fall onto the ground and keep out of the road, right? But that's just that reaction time. What's my
I would imagine there's going to be a lot of people out there that can't react to that. Be like, no, I can't let go of the bike. I can't.
Well, there would be like a mental thing where you'd be like, I have to hold on to the bike.
Yeah.
Tuck and roll. Like, I remember when I used to skateboard, you'd go downhill and you get speed wobbles, you just kind of have to make a decision. It's like, am I going to try and hold on to this, or am I going to just, like, bail out and tuck and roll? Kids, they don't know how to tuck and roll.
No.
They fly out of the car like a fucking starfish and then smack into another car.
But again, it's that mentality. It's almost now is like, they're invincible for everything, and safety is very secondary in a lot of stuff now, unfortunately.
Yeah.
We'll see about that.
Well, again, that's some of the, like, best, you know, quote unquote YouTube clips now is, you know, kids like, how dumb can I do something? And you know, like, I know this is going to hurt badly, but I'm going to do it anyway, and someone's going to film it.
Here we were using bath salts for baths, like idiots, for years.
Yeah, now I'm going to snort all these and see how this goes.
This is awesome, man. I think that we learned a lot of motorcycle stuff that, like, because this is one of those things that I think, especially at our age, because now people start to have a little bit of disposable income. Mm-hmm. Maybe they can go and get something like a motorcycle and enjoy it. And I think a lot of people don't do it because, like, for me personally, a lot of time it was like, well, where am I going to put it? But, like, I don't know anything about this. Like, nothing. Like, I've seen how you switch gears and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But I've never done it.
So
since I was, like, 11, my grandfather was doing it.
And now nowadays, it's actually like it's so much easier though. Some people have the affinity to they know and they can do it, and it's like second nature, right? But the good thing about it is, even being that I was already experienced when I started going through the process, so I knew I could get my M1. I know the rules of the road. I already have my G1, and I know these safety tips for motorcycles, right? Riding them, and the rules for motorcycles. But then, you know, I got my M2. But the good thing about it was is that I had to go, like, I made a point of going to the course. You have a course. And when you go to these courses, they literally teach you like you've never seen a motorcycle in your life.
Good.
Okay. Yep. You're completely blind. Like, you've like, what is this? Like, you've never seen a wheel before, right? Like, teach them like they're due.
Yep.
Right? And they would literally, like, go over even balancing yourself on the bike. They get somebody to push you from behind. Bike not started. Okay, push. And then we want you to press your brake, hold the clutch, and do this, right? You're not putting it in gear or nothing, but they're just getting you to roll, getting you the feeling of rolling on the motorcycle. And then they show you how to shift gears. And then this is how you do it, right? And then when you get to a point, okay, you're only allowed to shift into from one to two. That's the highest gear you can go to. Nobody goes into three, right? Good. But then they teach you how to do it and how to stop and go. How to go from stop and how to get going back into first gear, right? So they basically, like, literally spoon feed you how to do it. They spend 2 days doing that.
And it's then a weekend, right?
It's a weekend. Yeah. So the Friday is like an in-class, per se. Now it's recently been a Zoom. They do Zoom calls, right? Because it's COVID stuff like that, right? They do Zooms. But then Saturday is like basically all day Saturday you're being trained on how to use the motorcycle, and then that Sunday they do the test. But then when you go to do the test, everything they've been training you is that test, right?
Because it's just like an obstacle course
thing. Yeah, it's just an obstacle course, but by the time you get to the point of doing the obstacle course, they've already shown you all those techniques. They've already shown you how to teach you how to do, okay,
and ensured that you understood them
because you just did the one maneuver, right? So they change the pylons according to the maneuver that they want you to perform, right? And then they get you to run that maneuver, and then they teach you just that maneuver, right? How to roll in, do a zigzag in without putting your feet down, right? Like stuff like that. They will teach you that. But then when you learn it, like I did my M2 and I've been riding motorcycles for so long. I did the course and then I was like, oh, I never thought of doing that. I'm like, that makes sense. And it was just like an epiphany. And I was like, oh, so that's how they do that. Right? And it was just like, thinking, oh, I'm so experienced. I know how to ride a motorcycle, but whatever. You know, like, it was just like, no, I still walked away and went, oh, wow. Oh, okay. But it was like, there are people that really shouldn't ride motorcycles, and I will.
Well, there's some people who shouldn't drive.
Exactly. There's definitely people that shouldn't drive. Yeah.
You just can't.
Like, but I mean, like, as long as you're not a complete, idiot behind the wheel of a car, you should be able to know how to do a motorcycle. But it's now I find that after taking all these safety courses and getting my license in full and doing everything like that, I find I'm more aware on the road when I'm behind a car even. Like, I'm looking double while I'm going through intersections. Even though I'm in a car, I'm like, yeah, well, somebody can still blow a red.
Yeah.
Right? Somebody can still blow a red and blow the red. And if I had that one extra second to go like this and look left, right, right? Oh, I see this.
That's roof, the difference.
The roof glimmer.
Yeah.
Right? And I was like, oh, and then that gave me enough time to sit there and go take my foot off the gas. And maybe me taking my foot off the gas, even if they do hit me, that was just enough time for them to not hit
get me
out of the worst scenario of maybe it was like, you know, I actually got injured. Maybe it was that close.
When I had my first car accident, my mom said, like, you have to remember that you are behind the wheel. Now, this is a car. You have to remember you're behind the wheel of a 2-ton weapon.
Yeah.
Like a missile.
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
And a motorcycle
is a missile.
It's just a more streamlined.
It's a streamlined missile. Yeah. There's been motorcycle accidents where the motorcyclist not only died, but killed the two passengers in the car. They were going so fast that when they hit them that he killed, like, where he hit,
so,
and killed both people in the car.
I think it needs to be said both ways that, like, I agree 100% every time the summer comes around when you see it on Facebook, it's like, hey, watch out for people on motorcycles, like, they're back on the roads now, be careful. But also, motorcycle people, don't rip down the shoulder doing 150.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because, like, all you need is one guy who's like, oh, I wonder what's going on up there. Mm-hmm. Leans out into the shoulder a little bit. You're going 150. You're on gravel because it's the shoulder.
Yep.
That's what happens with a lot of motorcyclists. Sorry to interrupt.
Mm-hmm.
That's why most accidents with motorcycles takes place against transport trucks. They never see them.
The line of sight is tough because they can dart in and out of that line of sight so quickly, right, that they won't even know that they're even
there. They need to start training people on how to drive around transport trucks, because I've watched more people lately. Like, bikes aren't as bad because you get out of the way so fast.
Yeah.
But, like, if a transport truck is doing 60 kilometers an hour, and there is a hole that is opened up in front of them for you to be able to change into that lane, but it's only big enough for you to be able to get to the point where they're basically tailgating you, you're fucked. They can't stop that fast.
Yeah, that's
they need that room to slow down all that weight behind them.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, but I watch people do it every day. Every day I watch people do it.
And it drives me up. That's a huge thing for motorcycles. Like, outside of my bike swinging out, like, that's one thing. I've been, like, going down the road and... I've had a car. I went to one of the Friday the 13ths in Port Dover, and we were on our way back. And it was me, my buddy, and he had his 10-year-old son on the back of the motorcycle. Luckily, they were ahead of us, and it was me and my other buddy were behind him. Right. Well, as we were going, the car ahead of us wanted to make a left. No big deal. But we slowed down. But we all slowed down like nonchalantly, like it was normal. Nothing. No big deal. And then out of nowhere, all you hear is and screeching, and this giant Ram, white Dodge Ram, screeched, locked up all four tires, sliding in towards behind us sideways, like coming at us.
Because he wasn't paying attention.
We slowed down. Okay, it wasn't a crazy hard stop or anything, but it was a little bit of a
noticeable stop.
Noticeable, but nothing crazy, because we had my buddy's kid with us, right? Yeah. We're not trying to do anything crazy. So, and then all we just hear is, and I just look back and I see this giant truck. I'm like, oh man, here it comes. And I'm like, if I pop it, I'm like, I can try to get out of the way, but now there's 10-year-old kids in the way too, right? Yeah. And my buddy Anna, like, it could have been really, really bad. And that's even a huge problem being rear-ended. Like, guys, and...
Oh, just a tap on your back tire.
Oh, totally.
Like, you hit the back of me doing 5, I'll be annoyed with you and I'll get your insurance and figure it out. If I hit the back of you...
Oh, you're 5. Yeah, my wheel's
much more crippling.
Yeah, it's way more crippling on the bike and on me, right?
Yeah.
Now, there's like, I don't agree personally. I absolutely do not agree with lane splitting, right? Mm-hmm. I agree with lane filtering, right? So that's in my opinion, I think that lane filtering should be an actual common practice in general, because when you come up to us, so what lane filtering is, lane splitting is your jump going in between where the cars drive, right? Yes. While you're rolling.
That guy who's in the middle of the traffic jam going through. Yeah,
going through that I don't agree with. Lane filtering, when you're at a stop, right, or in dead slow traffic, like when it's like bumper to bumper grind, right, you have air cooled bikes and they need to be moving, because you're going to fry the motorcycle. Mm-hmm. They say, oh, well, then pull over and stop. Well, I'm now stopping on the highway, right? Like, how safe is that?
How safe? Don't stop anyway.
Yeah, that's not safe to be standing on the highway in general, right? So you don't want to do that. So you want to keep rolling. So lane filtering is when in a high, dense traffic area like that, or if you're coming up to a stoplight, right? Everyone's stopped. It's safer for the motorcycle rider to filter to the front of the pack. Why? Because if there's cars that come up behind it that aren't paying attention, mm-hmm. and they go, oh crap, instead of them rear-ending a motorcycle and mashing them in between two cars, right, they can filter out to the front, because then by the time that car, they're not going to get hit. They're not going to get rear-ended, right? So lane filtering, I agree with. It's safer, because they can get out and out from a pinch point, right?
Yeah.
They're in the middle of a pinch point. So if there's a car in front of me, a car behind me, they hit that car hard enough, right? I can still get mashed in between. Or if there's nobody behind me, right, they're not paying attention, right? Then I'm now mashed in between two cars, right? Mm. And there was two guys in the last year, I believe, they said that's what happened to them. They were in behind a minivan, two guys on Harley-Deckers, they were in behind a minivan, and they got just... you know, pancaked in between two, and both of them passed away, right? Fuck. And then, like, when you see the accident, the two motorcycles were literally like wedged underneath. It was like a Dodge Caravan, right? Like, and
fucking Dodges, like, man, dangerous vehicles.
I'm telling you, people who drive Dodges. Let me tell you.
So you're not a fan.
Not a fan of Dodge. I'm dodging them left, right, and center. No pun intended.
Well, on that note. Yeah. Well, thanks for coming out, buddy. It was quite informative. And as I said before, like for me, motorcycles is... And it's just my personal preference. Like, it's just never been...
I want one.
It's just, it's never been like just something for me. It's just like, yeah. I
when you get,
I love the culture. Like, I get everything about it. Mm-hmm. For me, just, but riding one, I've never had the drive to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not, like, I have nothing against that.
I find it so fun and I find it super relaxing. It's great. It's one of those, like, you know, and when you get those opportunities to go out and you get to ride, go to a campsite, you know, ride out to the campsite and then you go camping and then you jump on the bike and ride back, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's fun novelty, right?
Living it in the open road, man. Yeah. Sasha's gonna go outside and listen to Easy Rider now. I'll see you guys later. Or the Midnight Rider, sorry.
All right, well, thanks again. And I think that'll do it for us. But
awesome, thanks for having me.
All right,
bye. Bye-bye.
Special thank you to the super talented Jordan Washburn for providing all the theme music here for the No Pro Podcast.